This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
Welcome to it. It's Thursday evening, and we'll start the show this evening with a bit of breaking news from that came through this afternoon. Ministry of Public Enterprises will be dissolved over the next 4 to 5 months and will soon be transformed into a department under the Ministry of Finance. The ministry's dissolution was recommended by a high-level panel on the Namibian economy. We caught up with Jonathan Swartz, who's the Chief Public Relations Officer of the Ministry of Public Enterprises.
How it came about is PEs have been failing in their tasks, so it was only a good decision to move forward in terms of how we should handle funds, the strategic outlook of public enterprises, to rather look at how the ministry can be more beneficial in executing its duties. So what this means in layman's terms is that we will be reporting to the Minister of Finance. We will still be focusing on the tasks that we are supposed to do as a Minister of Public Enterprises. Nothing is going to change. What has changed is that we will be moving as a ministry into the Minister of Finance as a department. So what that will bring out is the efficiency in terms of how we will handle issues, because now we are closer to the Ministry of Finance, and the Ministry of Finance will then be the executor of all our operations.
We'll be following that over the next few months as the implications of that become known. Coming up in the show, on the lead story, it's all about Omea Golf and Lifestyle Estate. Story swirling this week. We'll be unpacking that and talking to one of the directors. Mikey Knight is in the spotlight this evening, and we'll unpack her love of startup and entrepreneurship. And we'll also be speaking to Tassius Chigariru, the group CEO of Old Mutual Namibia, about their sponsorship of the NSX Scholar Competition. That the prize giving was last week. Nova, a sponsor of that as well. So lots coming up in the show. Let's get to it. But first, it's time now for the BizNews Flash Briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
Coalition talks between political parties have broken down, with a deadline for forming councils in hung municipalities looming. Action SA leader Herman Mashaba has confirmed that parties have rejected proposals from the DA, where the latter seeks to control major metros like Tshwane and Johannesburg. Mashaba reportedly said, "We made it clear to the DA, please don't come out with a mentality of being a big party. There's no big party here, none of us has got a majority." The DA wants control of both metros, believing that the largest coalition partner should get the mayoral position. The DA says it still has faith in the talks. Meanwhile, talks between the EFF and ANC have collapsed completely, with the former not entertaining any more negotiations with the ruling party. EFF leader Julius Malema said the ANC had not been able to agree to even the simplest of terms, and that the EFF was instead focusing on Action SA. Deputy Finance Minister David Masondo says that the government should steer away from a blanket ban on talk of getting the private sector involved with struggling state-run companies, adding that getting private groups involved would boost competition and efficiencies where the state has failed. He highlighted the inefficiencies of state-run power supply through Eskom and freight through Transnet as examples where private sector involvement would boost reliability and reduce cost for end customers. However, he stressed that the subject needs more research and clear guidelines of how this would work. Civil society group AfriForum has sent a legal letter of demand to Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, stating that the continued implementation of national curfews as part of the state of disaster is irrational and unjustified. In the letter to the minister, AfriForum has requested written reasons why there are curfews, as well as supporting evidence that curfews are an effective precautionary measure against COVID-19. AfriForum has also requested that the implementation of national curfews cease with immediate effect. The civil society group has requested an urgent response by close of business on Friday, 19 November.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Time now for the lead story, and what a story it is here in Namibia. But as always, the lead story is proudly brought to you by Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. the Omea Golf and Lifestyle Estate. You might have driven past it on your way south from Windhoek on the B1. You might have heard about it. You might even be living there. And for years now, all sorts of stories and controversies and conflicts between the developer, the homeowners, the financiers, and troubling reports of financial situations are consistently appearing. This week in the newspapers, a story appeared about 90 plots being put on auction, apparently in a partial liquidation. Now, these are very, very complicated structures, often with large-scale estates. There's multiple companies, often multiple shareholders or multiple financiers. And, of course, there are lots of homeowners. So, in an attempt to try and unpack what is going on at the Omea Golf and Lifestyle Estate, we now talk to Daniel Tablanche, a director of the estate, for what is going on. Daniel, welcome to the show.
You're very kind. Thanks, Gary.
So you're a director of the company that is currently in voluntary liquidation process. And as such, you've been brought in, as I understand, as a consultant to help the debt restructuring to try and rescue things at Omea. So if I'm correct in that, the first question to ask is the stories around the 90 plots that were being that were up for auction this week. Can you just confirm what that was all about and how did that auction go?
Yeah. Gary, just to clarify, the development company is not in liquidation and or judicial management. The reason why I got involved initially is to attend to an independent business review on behalf of the major creditor, purely because of the lack of specific models or mechanisms within the Namibian legislation to deal with solvent restructuring work, like, for instance, business rescue in South Africa. So when I did the independent business review, just to give you a little bit of a heads up of where where everything started from and where we are now, the instruction, well, firstly, the request was to give options to the respective creditors under these circumstances, and that was around about early March this year, where the company was already in provisional judicial management. The process wasn't working, and it's a process that has failed in most jurisdictions in the world. And secondly, there was an application pending for the liquidation of the development company. And if you look at the organogram, obviously, I'm not going to do that now, but if you look at the organogram, if the development company had to fail because of the cross sureties within the group structure, then all the entities would have failed.
Okay.
So my initial instruction was, and the request was, Daniel, have a look at the current position. We don't want this opportunity to fail. It's seen as a gem in the Namibian proverbial cap. We have to do everything to ensure the survival of the entity. But how do we do that without the necessary mechanisms within our legislation? We then attended to the independent business review and forwarded some options to the secured creditors. And ultimately, it was decided to go for a solvent restructuring exercise or restructuring process. So just to confirm, there's no formal liquidation process.
Right.
The provisional judicial management order has been set aside. So the company is now, as it should be, solvent purely because of certain actions by secured creditors. So it's not de facto insolvent, it's not commercially insolvent, purely because of the actions of the major creditors. So what is the reason for the current position of Omea? Firstly, the market, the property market, not only in Namibia, but in the rest of the world, obviously cooled down materially. And there were also a lot of infighting with the developer for whatever the reasons might have been. As a restructuring officer, I don't get involved in sure. the history. I deal with the future. So there were a number of disputes amongst mainly the homeowners and the developer, that really caused the process or the disposal process to not only cool down, but to absolutely stop. And the only way for the repayment of the capital commitments and your interest commitments at the time was by disposing of encumbered properties, which then couldn't happen. So it created a substantial problem in respect of the repayment of the debt within the group structure.
So, Daniel, given all the things that are currently happening, there's hope on the horizon. There's a process ongoing. Can you give us an idea of the time frame and what sort of barriers lie in your way to getting Omea back to where it needs to be?
Okay. So the timelines that we've included in our plan is between 12 and 24 months. I'd be very surprised if it's going to take that long. Depending on the auction of tomorrow, depending on the disposal of the two larger properties on the development, being the care center and the school where we already have interest. The sooner those ones can be disposed of, obviously, the quicker we will reach a break-even position, and then the appointed directors will then just resign, because we're only there as sure. Preliminary directors. We only have one stumbling block in this whole development.
Okay.
And that's the actions of a small portion of disgruntled homeowners that is currently disclosing information that's absolutely incorrect and disappointing. Seeing that we've already had an in-person discussion with the homeowners, seeing that we've offered to answer any questions posed to the new directors and to deal with it in a specific group that was established for that exact reason, to stay transparent, because we don't want to be seen to be acting in exactly the same way as the initial developer and the way the developer was perceived by this group of homeowners. We absolutely need to be seen to be independent. We need to be seen to be transparent. And that's what we want to do.
Okay, Daniel, so let's drill into that for a second quickly. There's a small group, from what you're explaining to us, guys are happy. Creditors are happy. The market's busy flowing. They're busy selling properties again. The golf course flags are waving. And there's a small group of homeowners that are disgruntled and have the power to hold up the process. What is their motivation? Why aren't they seeing the light the same way everyone else is?
I think it's comfort and not trusting. They might see the fact that independent people are brought into the equation, might be seen as an extension of either the ex-developer, might be seen as an extension of the creditors, and not of the individuals actually living on the development. And that was a point that they've raised at our meeting that we had with the new directors, where they confirmed, Mr. Tablanche, we're nothing against you or your new directors, but you don't live here, you don't understand our position. Now, the answer to that was true, but I've done many of these developments. It's not something that's new to me. I don't have to understand your development, but to understand a specific development and the model. So we want to be absolutely clear. We're there to support, but because it's a legal document, because it's a legal process that we're currently implementing, it must be known that we will do our utmost to implement the plan, because we're not doing it for our own sake. We're not doing it only for creditors. Ultimately, this development must be saved for the homeowners. And that was the initial instruction from all the creditors. If this process fails, everybody fails. So absolute support from the creditors. That's why they've unanimously proposed and supported the plan. Homeowners might be disgruntled, but the ultimate benefit will only be for them, nobody else.
Okay. Daniel, we'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you very much. I think that's helped tremendously in unpacking a very complex issue. Bank Fintech and also FNB, one of the major creditors, apparently happy with what's happening and a process going forward and a plan, some hope on the horizon for I think a development that pretty much everyone in Vintech would hope succeeds, because it also paves the way for further development of our capital city. Daniel Tablanche there has been brought in to help restructure things and unpacking it very nicely for us indeed. That is the story around Omea Golf and Lifestyle Estates. That was our lead story, and our lead story proudly brought to you by Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 1035. It's the Business Report with Gary Strubel.
And you're back with the Business Report on Nova 1035. I'm Gary Strubel, and it's now time for the Spotlight feature. And the Business Report Spotlight is brought to you by Safland Property Group. Safland Property Group, a leading provider of property services since 1992. And welcoming into the studio this evening, Mikey Knights. Welcome to the Business Report.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Right, Mikey, as people would have guessed from the accent, you're not Namibian.
That's true.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing in country at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So I was born and raised in Germany in a small northern city called Bremen. I did my study both at Boston College and Dresden University and then my master's in political communications in London. So I've always been kind of living the nomad life because my first job took me into the field of emerging markets. I was working in countries like Indonesia, Thailand, Algeria and Turkey. And then moved back to Germany for 8 years to work in the startup field. And then I saw this beautiful offer by GIZ that was called a digital ambassador position.
Wow.
So I applied for that right away because it brought those two things that my career had been about together. It brought emerging markets together with startups. So the idea is to support digitization projects and startup projects in emerging markets. And that brought me here to Namibia in February this year.
Okay. So what do you enjoy most about working with – it's a tough field, startups, right?
Yes.
There's lots of broken dreams and there's lots of dreams. What do you find the most exciting about working with startups and especially in an emerging market situation?
It's definitely the dreams part. So you get to work with bright minds, really, that are super excited because they've had an idea. They are eager to solve a problem that they have found a solution to. And that is really the spirit, the high energy, the fast pace of working with startups. It's absolutely amazing. And you get to hear, obviously, about so many different ideas, whether they work out or not, but it's still always worth a shot.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about an academic question, literally. You mentioned a lot of universities around the world that you attended, and doing all sorts of cool things. What we hear a lot, especially in the digital space, is that studying's a waste of time, just chase your dream, just get it done. And here you are as a digital ambassador, having studied extensively in markets over the world. So my question to you is, what do you think the value of university is in getting to this kind of space that you're in now?
I think if university is done right, please all go to university and get your degree because it's not necessarily about the subject, but it should teach you critical thinking and it should teach you to be able to write, articulate yourself well, hold presentations, research on a different topic, be it for a homework or for your master's thesis, right? It should also teach you to work in group, work on group projects. So it's not necessarily if you do law or economics, but really that building around how your brain works and how you produce results. I think that is the most important. I do think, however, that is from what I hear about universities here in Namibia, that especially that critical thinking part could be a little bit more, you know, emphasized,
right.
I guess. So you need to work independently and really find solutions to problems already in university. That is the most important thing.
Now you find yourself in Africa, having come from Europe, obviously. Many Europeans, when they land in Africa, have a kind of a predetermined thought of how it's going to be. How was it for you? How's the adaption been from coming from first world environment into an African context?
So two things here. First of all, it hasn't been my first trip to Namibia. It was the second one. So I think it did help that I have an idea of, you know, the country, even though I visited it only as a tourist 4 years ago. And then the second thing, I spent some time on Ivory Coast, which I don't think any of the Africans can really compare. And this is obviously French speaking and all, but I did get, I think, a good of sense of the culture and was able to adapt and knew maybe a little bit better than anyone who has never been to an African country. I never spent more time there, what I was getting myself into. In general, I think Namibia is really, really easy. It made it very easy on me. People are so open. It was such a great environment to come in. And then, yeah, since I'm working in startups, you know, I'm not sitting in a dusty office. I'm in a co-working space at Dololo Dubox. There's always people coming in and out. So just by the nature of my work, I tend I met so many people right from the beginning, and I was able to create a good network, both in the professional context, and then also a good, great network of friends, really.
Now, I'm sure when you go back to Germany, which you will be going for holidays.
At some point. Oh, yes, hopefully. Yes, for Christmas, yeah. Yes.
I'm sure you get asked, what's Africa like? So what do you tell them?
I tell them that it's very exciting. And first of all, I would say Africa is not Africa, right? This is like speaking, you know, about the US, and then you have New York and LA and Boston, sure, being all different things. So I think people need to be more specific about that. You cannot take the African continent as one. And then I do say that I think the potential that is there is very exciting. And at the same time, it can be very frustrating because that potential remains unused at the time. And then I would probably say that I think a lot of people still have a wrong perception of Africa and about different African countries, so that they should make sure to visit. Because brilliant, that's when you change it.
And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the work that you're busy doing at the moment. But you got to pick a song.
I did.
Tell us about the song you picked.
I did. It was not an easy decision, I have to say, because I have so many songs that I love and that are very dear to me. But one of the greatest albums, I think, that was ever made in history is the 1986 Graceland album by Paul Simon, who I love and who's just the perfect music on the road, especially traveling on these roads here in Namibia. And the song I picked is Under African Skies, Paul Simon.
Joseph's face was black as night. The pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked his days under Africa's skies. This is the story of how we begin to remember. This is the powerful pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out, these are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain. Take this child, Lord, from Tucson, Arizona. Give her the wings to fly through harmony, and she won't bother you no more. This is the story of how we begin to remember. This is the powerful pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out, these are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain. Da boom ba boom ba boom ba oh. Da boom ba boom ba boom ba oh. Da boom ba boom ba boom ba oh. As black as the night, and the pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked the length of his days under African skies.
I'm sure many of you are humming along there. A very well-known tune off one of the world's biggest selling albums of all time off the Graceland album. That's Paul Simon. Mikey Knight's with me in studio this evening in the Spotlight feature brought to you by Safland. And so let's talk a little bit now perhaps about the work you're doing, mm-hmm. right? When you wake up on a Monday and you go mm-hmm. back home on a Friday afternoon, mm-hmm. what happens in those 5 days that you feel you're making a contribution?
That is just a wonderful question because there's so many like different playing fields that I'm on at the moment. So I'd say I work with startups on very different levels. So just to give you an example, last week we had a 2-day digital marketing workshop for young startups and small and medium enterprises. So that is very micro level, right? Teaching them, empowering them. Then we have startup programs that we are running. For example, there's one currently running with Beak2Gold that needs to be designed, that needs to be structured. We want to find new participants because we still have open slots for it. We have three startups participating in that program at the moment. So there's work evolving around those projects that we are running. And then the third thing is that I'm very busy with the ecosystem building as a whole. So the startup ecosystem in Namibia is very small at the moment. It's really in its infancy. And we need to work all hands on deck for more startups to be founded in the first place and for more startups that already exist to succeed, to really make it big, to really be able to expand to other markets, for example. So we're still waiting for those big success stories that you have in other African countries that Namibia has not been able to produce yet.
So let's talk a bit about what are the barriers for there's certainly we engage with a lot of young people here at the radio company. A lot of people come to us with ideas. There's no shortage of ideas, no shortage of young people looking to chase them. What are the barriers that startups face in Namibia?
Yeah. So first and foremost, bureaucracy. It's really like you should not be able to like open a bank account and register your business, find a name for your business, register that name, and it takes you like 3 months or 4 months to do. It should be a 5 days thing to do. It should not involve any cost. Like if I was government, I would give money, you know, to those that are opening, starting a new business or opening a new bank account, etc. So it's too costly and it's too complicated at the moment. So that's a very high barrier to start with. The second one is probably access to funding. So banks are very, very reluctant to give money. Obviously, this is a high risk business. A lot of startups fail. That is true, but there are still mechanisms, financial mechanisms that have been a proven success in other countries and they really don't exist here. You don't have a proper venture capital fund, for example, right? And you could have government incentives also for young founders to get them, let's say, through the first year. That is a second really, really big thing. The third thing is you have top dogs here. Obviously, you have very strong traditional companies. And I find the, let's say the appetite for innovation and innovative solutions quite low. So access to market for those startups that want to really give it a shot with their products or with their ideas, with their service solution, it's very hard to get their foot on the ground at some. So yeah, those young founders should be given a chance. And, currently it's not really happening here.
Talk a little bit about, Dalolo for us for a second. So you're employed by the GIZ.
Mm-hmm.
You've been seconded to Dalolo, which is a company that works specifically with startups.
Yeah.
And what is it that you find yourself doing with these guys?
So our main, first of all, co-working and bringing people together, right? So we do, for example, networking events because we found that there is not enough platforms to really bring senior executive policymakers and founders and students together. We have James Mupe, the economic advisor to the president next Wednesday speaking with us, you know, engaging in a discussion. So these are the kind of formats that we're hosting. We have co-working. So that's a bit the same idea, right? So instead of just sitting in your kitchen table, you come to us, you work from Dalolo Dubox, and then you share ideas, you meet over coffee with other coworkers, and you just exchange what you're currently working on.
Sounds like a lot of fun, huh?
It is.
Yeah. So I'm a startup and I want to get involved. How do I make contact with you guys?
Yeah, you contact us either on LinkedIn, on any of the other social media platforms. You go to our website, dololo.io, and then you see what package works best for you. Is it a monthly package or do you just, you know, spend a day with us and see if you like it? And then you can also inform yourselves about the different startup programs that we are running. So there's always different themes depending on who we're working with. For example, with the French embassy, we had a femtech program. Then with the Finnish, we were focusing on digitization and digital literacy with our extra techno program. And now with B2Go, we're really empowering startups of any field. So if you have a great idea that's maybe a little bit further, so we cannot just work with ideas for this program, but we will work with you for the next 8 to 10 months or so.
Excellent. And any big projects coming up next year?
I cannot say too much, so just follow us, bear with us, and then yes, there's going to be great stuff happening next year for sure.
Well, the future of Africa certainly lies in the hands of entrepreneurs, and if your kids are interested in getting involved in business and they've got the wonderful ideas, that's Dololo, Dololo.io. You can go check them out and find them on all the social media platforms. Mikey Nines, the digital ambassador from GIZ,
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your great choice of tune and thanks for sharing your insights with us this evening.
Thank you so much, Gary.
That is the Business Report Spotlight, and it was brought to you by Safland Property Group. Safland Property Group, offering the widest range of property services in Namibia.
The Business Report. The Business Report.
Welcome back to the Business Report. And it's now time to my favorite part of the show. We get to chat to Alec Hogg as we do the BizNews Wrap of the Week. And this feature brought to you by APS, African Personnel Services. We work for you. Alec, good to have you back on the show. It's been a busy, busy week, both here in Namibia with the announcement of Namibia Breweries being sold, as you can imagine, and in South Africa with all sorts of coalitions taking place after the municipal elections and a couple of really interesting business stories. So what's your biggest story of the week on the site?
Well, the biggest one on the website is definitely Angela Greasy, the whistleblower at the Zondo Commission, being sued in court by South African Revenue Services for 230 million rands. Now, even in the devalued current rand, that's a lot of money. And he thinks that no good deed goes unpunished. SARS says, you have taken money out of the country. We want your foreign assets. We want you to bring them back to South Africa so we can take them from you. So it's a fascinating story. And Martin Veltz, who I think you probably know as the editor of Nose Week, well, he's the doyen of investigative journalists in South Africa. He's really been a public servant in many ways for a long, long time. He's linked up with us now, and he got hold of all the court papers, went through them in a lot of detail, and both sides are pretty upset with us, which means we probably did something right.
That's exactly right. Well, my favorite story that I sort of going through the site this morning, having a look at what was on there, and it was interesting at the time that it popped out, was Christo Visa just barely holding on to his directorship at ShopRite. And that, perhaps you can just tell us a little bit about that. Yeah. What's going on there?
That is one of the big shocks in the business community that I've seen in quite some time. Christo Visa is the controlling shareholder of ShopRite, but he controls it through a relatively small percentage of the economic interest of the company. It's something that has been used to good effect in South Africa. For instance, Johan Rupert owns about 9% of Richemont, but he controls more than 50% of the votes. There's a similar situation with Koos Becker at Naspers and Prosus because of the way those businesses are structured. And the shareholders in ShopRite are not happy at all with the way that Visa has been conducting himself. They say that over years he's made hundreds of millions of rands through doing deals between his own companies or related parties. So they wanted him out. And 49% of them, which is an extraordinary number, voted for him not to be a director anymore of the company. But 51% did, of course, so he's still there. But it is a reflection of the way that in the past shareholders would not really bother to vote at all. And when they did bother to vote, they would vote in favor pretty much, or just give their proxy to the chairman. But shareholder activism is alive and well in South Africa and growing in leaps and bounds.
I'm sure Christo will would not have enjoyed that. Yeah, I think he quite enjoys being thought of as a super duper businessman. Another big story on the site that's interesting is Tongaat looking for 4 billion rand as a rights issue. Interesting timing as well for going to the market looking for that sort of money, and of course, just a really interesting time for the company in general. Are they going to be able to get it right?
Well, it's an old company. It used to be the province I come from, KwaZulu-Natal, used to be the biggest business in that, or the biggest corporation in Natal for many, many years, decades indeed, mainly in sugar. Then they realized that if they sold their sugar farms to property developers, or they would make a lot more money out of the sugar farms, particularly along the north coast of KZN near Umhlanga, and then they realized they'd do even better if they were to develop that property. Unfortunately, a whole lot of hubris set in. There was massive mismanagement, funds going missing, like a Steinhoff, but not quite as crooked. Well, not crooked in the way that Steinhoff was just a fraud. And new management were brought in a couple of years ago to fix it up. They've done a good job to a point, but when you are stuck with the kind of debt that Tongaat had around its neck, and you are trying to turn it around, you have to first of all talk to the banks. And the banks clearly have lost patience. And they are saying, we want you to raise money from shareholders. Otherwise, you're going to go into bankruptcy. And that's what's happened. The company's worth about R1 billion today. The rights issue, in other words, the shareholders are being asked to contribute R4 billion. So if you own R1's worth of shares in Tongaat, you've got to put in another R4 just to hold the same slice of your ownership as it is at the moment. Not surprisingly, when the news came out, the share price dropped precipitously. Then people reassessed and said, well, hang on, maybe they have got assets that are worth something. And if the R4 billion comes in, and it has been underwritten by a company in Mauritius, then there will be a future for the company, whereas in the past there might not have been. So I guess you pay your money, you take your chances. Our view on this one is pretty clear. It used to be part of the BizNews portfolio on a turnaround situation. And then the riots happened in KwaZulu-Natal in July. And we decided that the fundamental structure of the assets had changed. And we sold the shares out of the BizNews portfolio, which is not something we do often. In fact, we buy shares to hold indefinitely, hold forever. But anyone who would be investing in KwaZulu-Natal province today after the riots in July would be a very brave or incredibly foolish. So that's the view there. Their property assets, which were once worth a considerable amount more than they are worth today, have not been properly brought into the share price. So just as well we are, because the shares are now a lot lower than when we sold.
All right, that's it for the website then, Alec. And you were chatting to Herman Mashaba today. Tell us, we are squeezed for time, but tell us shortly how that interview went.
Well, brilliant.
We haven't. Where people can hear it.
We will be publishing it in the course of the day. So maybe this evening, go into biznewsradio.com or just go check it on Spotify. And of course, in our two radio stations in South Africa as well. But the story here is that Herman is saying, he is not so sure that he's going to go into any coalitions. They're having a big meeting tomorrow at 10 o'clock, all the parties that are naturally involved, and that would be Action SA, his party, the Democratic Alliance, if you like the business-friendly parties. But he says that they've got much bigger fish to fry in 2024 in the national elections, and the performance that Action SA has achieved in just 6 metros in this local election gives them a lot of hope that a truly multiracial party could emerge from the ashes of a political environment that many people are very disgruntled with. The fact that 20% less voters actually went to the polls in this local election than in the previous one emphasizes that people are, as the Action SA keep telling us, hutful. So Herman says he's keen to do coalitions in Johannesburg and Tshwane, but if they don't work out, doesn't matter. He's not going to do it. He's not going to sacrifice his principles, he's rather going to be working for 2024 for a big national position.
You can catch that on the site, and Alex, South Africa often reminds Namibians of a Netflix series, never-ending seasons with a cliffhanger and absolute despair at the end of everyone, and then new hope dawns. I need to have a dash later in the year. So thanks very much to Alec Hogg. Love chatting to you. We'll chat to you again next week. That's, you can catch all of that content and more on biznews.com. And the BizNews wrap of the week brought to you by APS, Africa and Personnel Services. We work for you.
Gary Struble on the Business Report.
This is Nova 103 and you're listening to the Business Report. I'm Gary Struble. It's now time for the NSX Market Watch, and the NSX Market Watch brought to you by Express Credit, money when you need it most. And joining us on the Market Watch this evening is Brian van Rensburg, the Managing Director at PSG. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you very much.
It's been a big week on the local bourse. Not often do we get this much action and packed into 5 days. Let's perhaps just start out with the announcements on Monday of the sale of NBL to Heineken. Also in that deal, obviously, South Africa's NBL's stake in Heineken South Africa being sold to Heineken as well. And then also Distell in the mix. So a little bit of a three-legged agreement going on there. But just unpack that deal for us a little bit and the impact it'll have on the local market.
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, the first part, as you said, there's basically three legs to it. In terms of if we look at the Namibia Breweries, there's basically two legs that directly affects them at this stage. First being the potential sale of HSA. So Heineken, in a broader range of transactions, putting together a new entity in South Africa, which is obviously the Distell announcement that was also made in South Africa relating to the business of Distell in SA. But basically what's happening is that Namibia Breweries has received an offer for their stake in HSA. Obviously that's going to shareholders for a vote on the 20th of December in order to approve that transaction. The total deal value was about 5.5 billion Namibian dollars, and most of that will then be, if the deal is approved, will be distributed to Namibia Brewery shareholders, which is a special dividend that will be declared, if approved, of just over 26 Namibia dollars per share. So basically, meaning that if you look at where Namibia Breweries traded post the announcement, just above 34 Namibia dollars and trading on the NSX, and then subsequent to the announcement, so if the deal is approved, shareholders will get a nice dividend, which is almost 77% of the share value post the announcement of the deal. So yeah, and then the second leg is with no further details at this stage, obviously, that as Namibia Breweries announced that there is also a potential acquisition of the Distell Namibia businesses, but they will make further announcements at a later stage.
So Brian, before we get onto the MTC thing, let's just perhaps ask, is there still a buy opportunity for people looking to buy those shares, given that there's quite a nice dividend going to come through, and is there sufficient value in the rest of the transaction to warrant that?
So look, as I said before the deal was announced on Friday, the share price was just over 34, and subsequently to the deal being announced, we first had a jump in the price to 42, and then after that, the price went up to 51, traded also at 51 at one stage. And then recently we've seen it pull back a bit to 50 Namibia dollars. So if you put that into context, so let's say you take out the 26 dollar special dividend that you're going to receive. So then in theory, if you buy Namibia Breweries now and the deal goes through, you're basically paying 24 Namibia dollars for what's remaining within Namibia Breweries, and which is the Namibian business. And obviously, you need to go and look at that. I think everybody's at this stage updating models and stuff to determine what the value of the remaining is. So at this stage, it's difficult to say if there's still investment opportunity in there. Obviously, with any corporate transaction like this, if you buy now, the deal has to go through for you to get that dividend. So if you do buy now, you must keep in mind that if the deal doesn't go through, there might be a pullback in the price again. But if the deal goes through, then you're basically sitting with Namibia Breweries that you pay 24 Namibia dollars for, which is for the Namibian business and the future growth possibilities. So, yeah, as I say, models updated at this stage.
All right, cool. So, also big news, a ginormous listing for the local bourse, MTC. There's been a lot of hype over the last month or so, a lot of speculation as well as to the uptake. Do we have an updated view on how the markets saw that? We're not yet at the share being traded. That, as I understand, will happen on Monday. But we would know what the subscription was like.
Yeah, so, the listing is actually taking place on Friday, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. MTC will officially start trading on the NSX. So, in terms of the listing of and the IPO that was announced by MTC, so obviously a maximum of 49% of the shares were available, and the announcement went out yesterday that an amount of just over 2.5 billion of shares were applied for, which is about 40% of the total of MTC. So, yeah, as you mentioned, it's an enormous amount that was raised, the biggest amount ever to be raised in any public offer of any company listed on the NSX. If you put it into context, Standard Bank, for instance, raised 1.4 billion. Capricorn or Bank Vintook Holdings at the stage when they listed in 2013 raised just over 1.3 billion. And then if you look at Letsego, that also raised, I think it was around 182 million Namibia dollars. So MTC listing, by far the biggest capital raising ever to take place on the NSX.
Okay, so it looks like it's a vote of confidence, but it's not an overwhelming vote. Would that be fair to say?
No, I wouldn't say it's not overwhelming. I mean, as I said, I mean, if you can imagine getting 2.5 billion out of the Namibian economy into a listing, it's still a significant amount. Obviously, if you look at the current economic environment, people are struggling. The economy's under severe pressure. I mean, we had the first positive quarterly growth in the last quarter. I mean, for the first time since 2019. So the Q2 growth for this year, so that's basically from the quarter ending June, we've had the first positive quarterly growth since the last quarter of 2019 in the economy. So the economy is under pressure, but still in that environment, to get 2.5 billion invested in an entity is definitely, I think, a vote of confidence.
Brilliant. And just lastly, in closing, it'll start trading tomorrow. There's obviously still quite a lot of shares available directly from the company. Are you advising your clients to buy?
Look, at this stage, to understand the IPO, so there's not necessarily any, not to say that there will be shares available tomorrow on the market. That will depend on if any of the people that applied for shares make them available for trading tomorrow. So we will have to see listing price at 8.50. So we don't really expect a lot of trading, to take place tomorrow. As we don't foresee that there will be a lot of sellers going around on the first day of listing.
Cool. Brian Ferensberg, Director at PSG, thank you very much for your insights here on the NSX Market Watch. And the NSX Market Watch brought to you by Express Credit. Money when you need it most.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 1035.
It's Nova 1035. This is The Business Report. I'm Gary Struble. And now on to a story that is the idea of developing the youth. And it's Old Mutual as main sponsors of the NSX Scholarly Investment Competition. And with me here in the studio, Tasius Chigiriru, who's the group CEO of Old Mutual. Tasius, welcome to the studio and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Gary, and I'm looking forward to this.
All right. Mm. Well, there aren't any tough questions.
Yes.
There's just questions you can go quiet on, that's all.
Okay.
So let's start out with Old Mutual's involvement in the NSX competition, which is targeted at both high school children and university students, and gives them fake money, made-up money to invest. Over where there's a whole bunch of rules involved about numbers of trades and so forth. So it's a really active competition. We've had some amazing results. The winner achieved over 30% returns in the 5-month period of the competition, which beat the market by 29%. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about why Old Mutual would be involved in competitions like this, where it's effectively kids using made up money.
Yeah, it might sound like a game, but it's not a game. There is really a lot of learnings that are coming through this. And that's how kids learn. They learn through games and then it turns into reality. Old Mutual is a household brand. And we proud ourselves by reaching out not just to the older generation that makes money from us and the ones that we call our customers, but to their children who will be our next generation of customers. So we are allowing them to learn because financial education is really important to Old Mutual. Without financial education, we don't have a nation that knows where it's going. So we will invest as much as we can in financial education. And for kids, it starts as a game. And that's what we are making it for them.
Well, a game that yielded some good results. From not only were the yields good on their investment portfolios, but they took home some pretty good prizes as well. First prize was $50,000,
yes.
With 20% of that going to the school and institution. And I mean, that's serious commitment from Old Mutual to getting these kids involved.
Absolutely. In May this year, we signed a commitment of $200,000 a year to make sure that we sponsor this this game and this education through a game that we have into our kids. Winning $50,000 real money, not fake money this time, real money, and 20% of it going to their institutions. It just shows how Old Mutual likes to touch communities, not just these kids, but the communities around these kids.
Interestingly as well, this was the first year that the university students and the high school kids competed in the same category. We saw university students and number 5, 4, and 3 on the podium, then an all-ladies team at number 2, and then a high school kid from Welcome Gymnasium winning the entire prize. That must have been surprising.
It's fantastic and surprising. It just shows you how much talent is in those kids. And age is just a number, let me tell you. And the kid that was won this thing has surprised us all. And this is just shows two things where we're going to. Don't undermine the ladies. Those 3 ladies checking the second prize, it's a fantastic thing to see. And I'm really proud of the young generation of girls that are coming through. As a father of girls, this just gives me heebie-jeebies and nice feeling. And to see the young kid from still in high school doing this and beating them all, it just shows you that there's no barriers. Age is just a number.
Brilliant. And thanks to Old Mutual for the renewed commitment to looking after the youth and educating, certainly in the financial sector, which is sorely needed. So thank you for that. We know it's a 3-year commitment. Mm. In financial services journalism, we must have full disclosure. Mm. And Nova 1035 is a proud partner of the NSX competition as well. And we're equally proud to stand alongside those young winners.
Absolutely.
And we'll be watching them. Hopefully we'll be interviewing them in a couple of years about their big investments.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's move on a little bit to your day job, looking after the entire mutual group here in Namibia. Mm. It seems to me one of the greatest challenges facing financial services companies, certainly in sub-Saharan Africa, is the massively changing demographic. We have an enormous curve upwards of people coming through. We know that 50% of our population is under the age of 18. That curve doesn't seem to be diminishing. That doesn't mean the money is shifting downwards. It just means the need is shifting downwards and the volume, the numbers, people moving upwards in their life cycles and perhaps into middle class and the kind of things that that mean that financial planning, financial services become an essential element. How does a brand like Old Mutual, which is well over 100 years old, make that leap to being, while still being trusted and storied and every word being analyzed by analysts to make sure they got the stories right, and being attractive to a much younger market where there's an immediate need for gratification for information and brands have to be much cooler. How does Old Mutual make those leaps?
This is a challenge facing a lot of the big companies, Gary. And if you don't evolve, you'll be a dinosaur. And you'll be what happened to Nokia, what happened to Kodak. And there's old mutual. If you look at our customer base, if you removed everybody above 40 years old, we have no customers pretty much. And that tells you that we are a business that focuses on looking after parents is our core business. But the generation you have today are the parents of tomorrow. And the baton stick used to be handed over from generation to generation because the difference between two generations was small. Now, previously you had to go five generations apart to see major difference. Mm. Now, the two generations, one after the other, they are different species.
Yeah.
And at Old Mutual, we're having to crack our minds every day how we can keep up with this young generation. We know that people always want to ensure their lives. They always want to ensure their assets. They always want to save, but it's being done very differently with the generation of today. So we are on our toes having to figure out how we keep up with them. Hence now we're having to make them play games like this, is try to remain relevant among their lives. And that's why we are here as Old Mutual.
Challenges ahead then. And perhaps let's move on to the broader economic environment. We're obviously in a low growth environment in sub-Saharan Africa at the moment. We had South Africa's midterm table last week, the week before that, Namibia's. Neither country particularly bullish over the next 3 to 4 years, all anticipating very low growth. In South Africa, the rebound's been a bit stronger than they expected, but that's a commodity super cycle, and who knows how long that will last. Give us an idea. You've now been in country for a full year, in charge of the group at Old Mutual. What sort of sense do you get about where you're excited about investment opportunities over the next 5 to 10 years inside this economy and inside the Southern African environment?
Yes, thanks very much, Gary. Namibia is looking for growth. If we look at our government debt, it has doubled over the last 5 years. If you look at our GDP, it is back to where it was in 2013 or 2014. We are back 7-8 years. We are looking for growth. And so where are we going to be investing? The answer is in Namibia, at least in terms of jurisdiction. We are going to be investing here as Namibians. And what are we going to be investing in? We are looking for growth for this nation. We are looking for new opportunities. And our minds are very open-minded right now. And there are things that are coming up, like technological ideas that are coming through. These green energy ideas that have been coming through a lot from the president's office that we are following and exploring. All we know now is we need to put our money in Namibia, in technology and in green energy, because those are the new growth areas. And Old Mutual is committing itself to Namibia 100%.
Brilliant. That's wonderful to hear that. Plant your roots at home and make sure that we're growing what we have here. So perhaps just in closing, if any entrepreneurs are listening to this, businessmen with ideas, businessmen looking for partners, how do they go about bringing along Old Mutual for the ride or talking to you guys about becoming a partner?
You would have heard from even the bank governor talking about SME investment now and looking for these entrepreneurs, young businesses, small businesses. This is the focus area now, not just the big giant businesses that have carried us for the years before. We are now looking for new opportunities in country. So for the young entrepreneurs, the young businesses, Old Mutual is looking to see if we can partner you, invest in yourselves, and we are open. We have got a lending business that is looking to do a bit more SME lending, to see if we can support them grow. We have got a business that is already large in itself now. We are looking for young partners that we can partner with to grow our wings so that we grow together. So right now, Old Mutual is very open to helping the entrepreneurs, the SMEs to find new growth.
Tessius Tigero, the Group CEO of Old Mutual, thank you very much for joining us on the Business Report this evening. More business reporting on the other side of this.
Thank you very much, Gary.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. This is the Business Report on Nova 1035.
Now, the story from Namibia this week is the release of a report by the African Peer Review Mechanism, focusing specifically on the issue of youth unemployment. It's the first report of its type to focus on Namibia, and the fact they're dealing with youth unemployment is probably the correct priority. These reports are generated by member countries, and most of Africa is a member. I think it's 28 countries that are members to this mechanism. With me on the line now, Robert McGregor, Head of Research at Cirrus Capital. Robert, this report got released with a little bit of fanfare from government. There's one or two alarming statements in the report, amongst them that government's done sterling work in addressing this, but then goes on to highlight 15 different areas that the government's been deficient in actually addressing it. It comes up with a number of recommendations, most of them pretty broad, and not particularly practical. It's hard to see how immediately something can come from this. So with all of this in mind, what should government be doing? This is a very real problem, right? Youth unemployment. We know what our population dynamics look like. It's just going to get worse. What should government be doing in the short term to address this very critical issue?
Yes, so the report doesn't really list much new information. The most recent labor force data we have is from 2018, and we can see those real troubles there already. At that stage, if you use the youth definition of 15 to age 34, 35, the unemployment rate was close to 50%. If you broaden that down a bit more, if you take ages 15 to 24, the unemployment rate was actually at around 60%, so nearly two out of every three people in that age group are unemployed. And what's very concerning is obviously those are the people leaving school and either not going into vocational education or university, or people shortly after leaving vocational education or university who really aren't able to find work. They're struggling to find work. As we all know, Namibia's population pyramid is obviously very heavily skewed to the youth. So not only do we have a huge large youth population, but we've got most of these youth unemployed as well. The things that we've seen sort of talked about over the last couple of years and that have been implemented on and off haven't really made a material difference. If you look at the data available, the unemployment situation obviously has not eased over the last two or so years, given the growth environment that we've been in, as well as the COVID-19 pandemic and the shocks from that. And so we definitely need to do something different and very drastically. From a policy front, we aren't seeing any huge or major overhauls. I think it's some of the recommendations are quite obvious, and we see those in this report as well. I think if you speak to most people who sort of run businesses and look for people to hire, your sort of very basics still need addressing, you know, the ability to read and write very well. I think, you know, that clear focus on sort of English, especially given that that's the most widely used language, as well as sort of your math and science skills in school, we aren't seeing that adequately addressed. And so definitely the quality of education. And so even for those university graduates, they often sit in a disadvantage where those skills aren't adequate. And that's obviously very much from the base, from that schooling we see. But then also the ability for people to generate their own income in different ways and forms. We're really making it difficult for people to be self-employed. Especially the young entrepreneurs, those who've decided that, you know, if they're not finding opportunities elsewhere, they'll make their own opportunities. And from that perspective, we really still seem to be, hampering any development on that front. If you consider the difficulties that are required to start, run, and operate a business, from the hoops you need to jump through, the approvals from a host of ministries, offices, agencies, councils, and so on, that you need, the amount of time it takes is both the cost in terms of the time as well as the various fees and so on involved, the sort of costs you need to cover, for instance, potentially rent, while you may be waiting 3 or 4 months before you're allowed to operate. And the fact that a lot of these processes are still very, very slow, very, very manual, and often need to be done face-to-face.
Robert McGregor, Chief Researcher at Cirrus Capital, responding to a report issued this week by the African Peer Review Mechanism, called Targeted Review on Youth Unemployment in Namibia, with over 15 different areas that government needs to work on to fix this problem. We hope they do. We hope they read the report and that things start happening in this area.
The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. Easily the biggest financial news this week was that Dutch brewer Heineken is buying 25% of Heineken South Africa from Namibia Breweries Limited, as well as a controlling share in the local operation, with Heineken CEO Dolf van den Brink saying the offer is a vote of confidence in the long-term prospects of South Africa and Namibia. We contacted Sven Thieme, the executive chairperson of the Altava and List Group, to find out more about the deal.
Heineken is going to buy the 25% shareholding, which is currently owned by NBL in the South African business. business. So the 25% is the one part of the transaction. The second part of the transaction is that Heineken is going to buy the majority shareholding in NBL, which means that NBL can spread its wings. France are probably going to be launched more globally than ever before. It will unleash a lot of potential for NBL, also in the Southern African context and maybe beyond.
Government raised only 2.541 billion Namibian dollars instead of the hoped for 3.124 billion Namibian dollars from the sale of MTC shares, though the IPO was still the largest ever recorded on the NSX. The government institution's pension fund has invested over 286 million Namibian dollars since 2012 in the construction of affordable housing in the Erongo region. Conrad Lutombi, the chief executive of the Roads Authority, said that a $1 billion donation by China Aid will be used to build the second phase of the new bypass to Hosea Kotoko International Airport, and that the project will be carried out by the Zongmei Engineering Group. The Ministry of Education, Arts and Culture, together with the World Food Programme, launched the National Homegrown School Feeding Programme, which uses locally grown farm produce from smallholder farmers to provide children with nutritious midday meals on school days. And the 2021 edition of the State of Tax Justice, an annual look into how the super rich and global corporations evade taxes, found that South Africa lost $2.9 billion to corporate tax abuse and $648 million to tax abuse by rich people in 2021. To find out if a similar situation is likely to exist in Namibia, we contacted Dr. Omu Kakua Matunda, an economics lecturer at the University of Namibia.
Sometimes it is facilitated through corruption by corrupt officials. And the second one, the capacity in our tax authorities to detect some of these things like transfer payments. So if you have an agency like NAMRA, that is where you want them really to have teeth to try and get that capacity to see what the multinationals are doing. They are not going to detect everything, but at least they'll have at bare minimum that capacity that could try and maximize revenue and the benefit to the citizens of that particular country, in this case Namibia. So yes, it is very likely to happen here.
In other news, South Africa is set to introduce stricter BEE requirements in 2022. India, China and the United States are facing criticism for watering down the COP26 pledge on coal. Instead of phasing out coal, the world's three biggest carbon emitters agreed to phase down coal usage. But COP26 President Alok Sharma has defended the amendments, saying he had to accept the wording on coal, otherwise they might have ended up with no deal at all. And in a continuation of the spat between billionaire Elon Musk and World Food Programme Director David Beasley, which saw Musk say that if the organization could show how $6 billion could solve world hunger, he would sell Tesla stock right now and do it, the WFP has done just that.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
Thank you, David Bishop. What a show. So much going on. And brilliant for the Business Report to be right in the middle of it. So you can stay tuned every week here, Thursdays at 6 o'clock, and we'll go looking for the big stories and bring them to you and hopefully give it to you in a way that, that kind of makes sense. Sometimes these guys have a way of making things very complicated. Being pretty dumb myself, I like making it simple, and I hope that's what we're able to do. So that's it for the show. We had some big stories and some great personalities on this evening. If you've missed some of it, you can go check out more of it on our website, nova.com.na, iono.com as well. You can go search for Nova there and find the Business Report. Or you can pop us an email, tbr@nova.com.na. Let us know what's going on. If you've got a story, if you've got a tip, you've got something you'd like us to go and investigate, tbr@nova.com.na. That's it for this week. Thanks to Lami Lago, our producer, to Raymond Ziefeld, our technical producer, and to everyone else who contributed to this week's Business Report. Have a wonderful weekend.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struble and produced by Limi Ilago and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.